Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road. And, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight, we're going to talk about the next two movies in the Planet of the Apes series, beginning with Beneath the Planet of the Apes from 1970. This movie was shoved into production 6 months after the original one was released because it was such a big hit. But with only half the budget. So, is it fair to say none of us had seen this movie or seen it recently?
I have seen parts of this movie. Like, previously, I had seen parts of Planet of the Apes. I'd seen parts of this movie, probably on television and without any context or explanation. So, a couple scenes seemed familiar, but none of the dialogue I could predict. Although I was ready for it to end when it ended. So,
Drew, had you seen this before?
I had seen it before, maybe 25 years ago. So I didn't remember much.
Yeah, I don't even know if I mean, I'd seen it before a couple months ago, but I had not seen it before this go-around, I think. And I mean, we may have done a Planet of the Apes dive into rentals again 25 years ago. I could have been a part of that. But Brother Jay, since it's boyfriend Jesse who's responsible for this.
Yeah, I'm going to drag his ass on here one of these nights because he's responsible for this.
So what did you guys think about it?
Well, First, let me preface this with because I've been making boyfriend Jesse suffer along with me when we watch these, not suffering by myself. So there's some satisfaction we can all have about him having to suffer through these movies with me. He confessed halfway through the second movie that he had not, A, known there were older movies, and B, had only intended us to watch the modern new movies that were produced in the last decade or so.
So, not even the Marky Mark movie?
I don't know. I don't have a good point of reference. I wasn't in a mood to interrogate because okay. I had to... Yeah, I didn't want to elicit any more suggestions that we watch movies because... yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry, what was the question? I've lost my mind.
You're putting Jesse in recommendation jail?
Oh, yes. Yeah, there will be a probation.
I think that's a little harsh because, as it turns out, I think this is a series worth going through. It's going to be a little bit of a slog here in the next 2 weeks, I think. But I don't know. I thought there was plenty to like about both movies. Maybe it's just nostalgia talking, but we'll get there. But Brother Drew, what was your reaction to this movie?
Wait. Oh, sorry. You did watch the third movie, right?
I watched all the movies up through the Marky Mark movie. Oh, yeah. No, okay. I've watched all five of the original ones, and there's something I like about them. Man, we'll talk about that momentarily. Or unless you want me to tell you right now.
Oh, no, I would like the suspense of waiting.
Okay. So, Drew, what's your initial reaction to this movie?
This movie definitely took me on a journey. there were things I liked about it. I liked the main dude. I don't remember his name, but...
James Franciscus, who plays Brent?
Brent, yeah. So it was like they wanted to get somebody who looked like Charlton Heston, but was more handsome.
That's exactly what they were doing.
Yeah, he definitely looked like a more handsome version of Charlton Heston.
And cheaper.
But then when they shared the screen together, I didn't realize either how short Brent was or how tall Charlton Heston was.
I think Charlton Heston is a gigantic guy.
Yeah.
I mean, that may be his presence It was just because he's so, I mean, gives him that great voice because I think he's got a gigantic body.
Yeah, but I liked this movie. We're talking about Beneath the Planet of the Apes, right? Yes,
sorry, Beneath the Planet of the Apes, 1970.
Yeah, I liked it to a point. I was in on it for the first part of the movie because I had a really bad taste in my mouth from the last time I watched it, not even though I couldn't remember anything. So I liked the setup. I liked that they're sort of building out the world. They're introducing like the very distinct classes of apes, the gorillas, the chimps, and the orangutans. There's a little bit of a mystery element, which I was okay with. And then they got to the magic telepath people. And that whole thing just made no sense. Like, it still hurts my head to think about. All of the really mind-boggling choices they made.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I totally agree, first of all. But yeah, when I watch this movie, I try to put myself, in the mood. Because after the first one especially, you have to be in the mood for like a 60s sci-fi movie. And I still think the first one is a pretty good representation of 60s sci-fi. Pretty solid science fiction story. It's got a cheesy ending, but it's only, I think, cheesy in retrospect. It's still a good Twilight Zone-y kind of ending. This movie has what I've known since I was a teenager is an Eric ending. I love the way these stories end. Spoiler, the entire world dies. The whole planet is blown up. Now, how you get there is kind of an interesting journey, but
no,
but yeah, I mean, that's the thing that I like about this whole first five film series, and what hopefully I'm going to enjoy about the more recent three films is that there's a lot of world building and they're pretty true to it. Even the goofy stuff, they hold through the storyline through the whole thing in a way that I find kind of enjoyable. This is a movie that I guess we'll just get into the plot if you guys don't mind, unless you have more preparatory notes.
I will preface this with the fact that I tried to convince myself that this movie should be forgiven some of its sins because of the time it was made. Which I had a hard time with, harder in this movie, because some of the ridiculousness. I think at the point that there were sauna steam bath monkeys, I started to really... That's I think, where the worm turned, and I was really kind of...
That, to be honest, was my favorite... spoiler here.
I thought that was hilarious.
Well, not only is it hilarious, and... We get, this movie gives us everything we want. There's a problem in the next movie that it's just one tiny problem.
Yeah, that one problem.
Yeah, it's something that the TV show suffered from, I think, too. And I haven't seen that recently, but I remember liking it as a kid. The problem, though, is that the more apes, the better. The apes are the interesting characters. The people are not interesting. And even this is why this movie was great, for as far as I'm concerned, from the ape parts. First of all, you've got General Ursus, the gorilla general guy, who is played by James Gregory, who is Senator Islin from The Manchurian Candidate and Inspector Luger from Barney Miller.
Yeah.
And he is great. Even his speech, like watching, because I watched it twice in the last week. Yeah, it's kind of goofy. But his speech is a legitimate speech, when he's talking about how there's this forbidden zone that we discovered in the first movie. And hey, if there's people living there because they sent some scouts out and the scouts did, only one of them came back and he came up with a crazy story. But the idea is we have more people, we have more apes rather. We need to expand to, if people are living in the forbidden zone, well, they must eat something. So there's food there. So we need to expand our empire and we're going to lead a charge out there and take possession of the forbidden zone.
And Charlemagne.
Yeah. And you've got Maurice Evans back as Dr. Zaius, who's great. He's actually sort of kind of a good guy in this movie, more than he was in the first movie.
I dare say nearly repentant.
Yeah, kind of. And then we have Cornelius, who is not played by Roddy McDowall, but instead he's played by David Watson, because Roddy McDowall had another commitment, apparently.
But he was doing a Roddy McDowall impression the whole time.
Oh, 100%. And this movie does suffer from the fact that there was not enough Cornelius and Zira. They rectify that in the next movie. But, yeah, I mean, so this movie starts off, you know, the day after, or the very day of the moment after the first movie ends. I mean, you get to replay most of the scene where he says, "Damn them to hell." And where Taylor, Charlton Heston, and Nova, Linda Harrison, who, by the way, continues her non-stunning performance in this movie. Not impressed by Nova, although she doesn't get treated very well.
Well, you could argue no one gets treated well since they all die.
Well, it's true. Well, yeah, along the way, though.
Well, yeah.
So,
at least it was a big deal when the world died.
There is a startling lack. There was a startling lack of Charlton Heston in this movie. You almost don't see him at all, which I hadn't expected.
He only agreed to do it if he wasn't required for very long, if they could donate his salary to charity, and if they killed off Taylor. Those were his requirements. Because he did not want any more sequels. He saw the sequel coming, and he's like, no, no, no. So, you know, good for him.
You know, those days are gone. If you have a sequel, you want to milk that gravy train until there is no money to be wrung.
Oh, sure. And, you know, this was actually, these movies were all pretty hit movies. They weren't all critically acclaimed. The first one was critically acclaimed and made money. This one made plenty of money. It just wasn't thought of very well.
Well, the next one made a shit ton of money for an entirely different reason.
Well, yeah, we'll talk about that.
Did they start shooting this movie before they had a finished script? Because it seems like it.
They had a lot of script problems with this movie. In fact, Arch Obler from Arch Obler's Lights Out Everyone contributed to a screenplay revision, but I think James Franciscus also did a screenplay revision. A ton of people did revisions on this movie, because originally it was a Rod Serling and Peter, whatever his name was, the French author, who submitted a script, and they are a screenplay, and that was pretty well rejected. Plus, the studio, since they cut the budget, the studio hired sort of a lower-tier director, Ted Post, who directed, I think 179 episodes of Peyton Place, 24 episodes of Rawhide, 56 episodes of Gunsmoke, and the movies Magnum Force and my personal favorite from Multivisions, Whiffs.
There's no way that if you were to even just, like, storyboard this movie, there's no way you could say with a straight face that it actually made sense.
Well, we'll get there. So it starts off with Charlton Heston, Taylor, and then Nova riding off on horseback. And they ride a little bit and immediately see gigantic, bad CGI for our current standards, flames. And the earth quakes and all sorts of crazy stuff happens. And Taylor dehorses and then tries to go investigate, and he disappears, leaving Nova on a horse with no name out in the desert. Elsewhere in the Forbidden Zone, there's a second spacecraft that crashed, very conveniently. But I really like the spaceship effects. I like the, not effects, design, just the design of the spaceship.
It's sinister.
It's great. It looks great. It looks great sinking in the first movie. What is it sinking about?
It looks mean.
It just looks great. However, it did strike me again that... So they landed on this planet, and at this time, they're talking about... James Franciscus has figured out that this is some sort of Haslian time loop. And So he doesn't know where they are. Doesn't really care. His captain or whatever is blind. They're talking about the sun, and there's only one sun, which you think that would be a topic of conversation. The fact that they could breathe the air, well, I mean, maybe it was just off-screen conversation. And then when he hears and then sees a horse, okay, that's the thing that puzzles me. You hear a horse and you think, ooh, good deal. This is a planet that he's not set foot on. Are there a lot of planets with horses on them? I mean, again, it's maybe a Star Trek thing, but come on. Again, this the rock monsters. I'd be worried about the rock monsters. But no. He hears a horse. He goes up. He sees no-oh after he's burying his captain.
I got my hopes up so quickly because I love the fact that there's this huge shot, this wide shot, and it kind of pans, zooms in so that you see the guy on the ground, and then you see the spaceship, and then you see someone climbing out of the spaceship. And it's all very grand and majestic, but then to tend to his wounded skipper, he's holding the most ridiculously tiny first aid kit.
Well, there's that.
It's like, yep, I'm on board with this movie at that moment.
So there's a discussion, or Nova shows up on horseback, and there's a discussion where Brent does a monologue to Nova, who doesn't answer anything, but then immediately like horse jacks her and forces her to take him to her leader or whatever, based on dog tags, which I thought was fine. You know, she's got Taylor's dog tags. Apparently, if you're crash landed on a desert planet or whatever, you take your dog tags and immediately stick them in your pants. Cause Taylor did that. And then flashback, he takes them out of his pants and puts them around her neck. And then when Brent has to hide them later, he puts them in his pants. I guess that's the only place you don't have pockets or anything, so whatever.
They're jingling, baby. Go ahead, baby. They're jingling, baby. Sorry, it's an LL Cool J song.
So Nova and Brent, by the way, our mother, when she heard that James Franciscus played the character, she's like, isn't he kind of a pretty boy? Like, well, yeah. compared to Charlton Heston, he is. Also, for 1970, he is ripped.
Yeah. He's almost John Holmes-esque.
John Holmes?
The porn star?
I don't think... Was John Holmes ripped?
I'm talking about the mustache and the poofy hair.
Oh, well, maybe. But I don't know.
It's not what I think of when somebody drops a John Holmes reference.
Yeah, exactly. The horse looks at James Francis is like, whoa. Anyway, so.
Got a lot of confidence there, buddy, even though you're 2 feet shorter than Taylor.
Exactly, yeah.
It all makes sense now.
Yeah, so he and Nova go over to they sneak up on Ape City, which, by the way, it irritates me that throughout the series this is referred to as Ape City. But, oh well. It is a city.
What would you call it?
Yeah, I was going to say, what?
Yeah. Well, anyway. So they go and they manage to...
Apeville?
Yeah. Apetropolis. So that's where we meet...
Simian Valley?
That's very nice. Okay. Hats off. Simian Valley. Yeah, so they end up sneaking up on Simian Valley. And they see... General Ursus, who is talking to the big council group or whatever, and he's talking about how going claiming lands for apes, blah, 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 and Dr. Zaius is, and he's actually appealing. There's a lot of talk about religiosity in these movies.
Well, boyfriend Jesse points out, this is a quote, I like how Zaius says science when he really means religion.
Exactly, and Ursus talks about religion, too. It's interesting. But he's basically whipping up the crowd in a very Manchurian candidate, Senator Island kind of way.
He was good at it. By the end of it, I was agreeing with him.
Exactly, yeah.
Let's go get those mutants.
That's right. So we have the chimpanzees. Basically, the General Ursus is a very powerful figure. And what we have is Zira... Who, again, she's a pretty hip chick from 1970, or a 3955 or whatever, because she has her own opinions. She's not going to stand during the standing ovation for Ursus until Cornelius, her husband, says, "Woman, you are standing." She's like, "Fine. Not because I want to. Not for her principles." By the way, there's some fun late 60s, early 70s misogyny and domestic violence talk in this movie that I found very charming. So, there's a whole thing about how humans are horrible and they're blah, blah, blah. And so, Brent and Nova hear this, and Brent gets his hatred of apes from the hearing this speech, which you can understand, I suppose. So, they end up... Nova takes them to the house of Cornelius and Zira, who find them in the house, and are treating Brent's wound because they actually are hiding in the bushes, and gorilla just takes a wild shot. He hears like rumbling in the bushes and just takes out his pistol and shoots into the bushes, which I'm not a hunter, but it seems like a bad idea. Me, when I hear rustling in the bushes, I turn tail, as it turns out, as we learn. Yeah, so Cornelius and Zira find Nova, and then they meet Brent, and Brent is the second human who speaks, and so they're all, she's all...
And he's way better looking than the first. Oh,
yeah, exactly. And wounded, too, so she can nurse him back to health. But this isn't that kind of movie. Because Zaius shows up, and they have to hide in the closet or the pantry or whatever. And so, as Cornelius gets the door, Zira's got this bloody gauze and whatnot. And so, when Dr. Zaius comes in and says, "Hey, what's that all about?" She's like, "Oh, Cornelius hit me because I was rude during the Ursus speech." And Dr. Zaius is like, "Yeah, that's about right."
Domestic violence is funny.
Yeah, jeez. Hashtag time's up, Dr. Zaius. Jeez.
Very nice.
Me too.
Yeah. So, they're going to try to flee the city after Zira and Cornelius give them some duds to make them look more human. And they end up getting...
And smell more human.
Yes, and smell more human. And they end up getting captured by gorillas with the nets that Drew talked about were the apes' supreme weapon.
The high proficiency nets.
Yes.
Yeah, but what I like about this movie is it shows them practicing with the nets.
That's true.
No wonder they're so good. They actually practice on live targets.
Well, that's
with a lot of different intricate drills.
Well, that's the thing. And this again, I love this part of this movie because, yeah, Ursus is developing his guerrilla army, and they're not very good. They're just starting out with this whole thing. But they've got this whole, sort of boot camp that involves, live targets. Human slaves, basically.
I disagree that they're not very good. I thought they were amazing.
The gorillas?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
They're great.
But yeah, they had lots of they were practicing tactics and maneuvers and all sorts of stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, Brent and Nova get captured and they're taken back to be used for target practice. And Zira tries to save them, but Ursus is like, "Oh no, they are target practice." So she ends up in a very clever way outsmarting the gorillas because that's the one thing about gorillas is gorillas aren't very smart in this world. Chimps are much smarter.
Yeah, she used the old double lock gambit.
Yes. And then you get, this is like maybe because the director directed every episode of every TV Western ever made and several Clint Eastwood movies. But we've got like a horse fight, not a horse fight, sorry. A Western battle on a, horse-drawn, what do you call it?
A wagon wrestling.
Yes, there you go, a wagon wrestling. And that's kind of fun.
All of these sound super dirty after Jason's John Holmes reference.
Just be careful when you slip into Simien Valley.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, basically, Brent and Nova escape. And
basically.
and jump on a horse, and they go off and hide in a hole, literally. They're being chased by gorillas. They find a hole. They hide in a hole. The hole happens to be a subway terminal. And I really like the sets in this movie. And like the matte art and things. That they really took advantage of the whole, you know, New York post-apocalypse thing.
Mm-hmm.
They did a great job.
Those steel girders were in really good shape for being as old as they were.
Well, we don't know what girders are like after 2,000 years.
Still on board with the movie at this point, by the way.
Me too. Super on board. And it got a little slow when they're hiding in the hole, because basically now you have a race.
A race, I'm winning.
Between the apes, who are going to conquer the land, and Brent and Nova, who, by the way, are just hiding. They have no mission, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They're just kind of making it up.
Yeah, they're just running from this one platoon of apes who don't want to be there, but they don't have a choice.
They were ordered to search.
I like the fact that they didn't make Brent super dumb and that he figured out pretty quickly that they're on Earth.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a literal sign staring him in the face, so that helped.
It doesn't hurt that he was from New York, apparently.
Well, then there's the first problem. The humming.
The hum.
It makes total sense.
Okay, yes. And so they hear the hum, and they start exploring further, and blah, blah, blah. They reach the... Oh, there's... I was mentioning it last movie. Brent has issues inside the tunnel, especially with water. Water quality is a problem. He drinks and spits out a lot of bad water during the course of being underground, but it never really amounts to much. Until they end up outside of St. Patrick's Cathedral, where they drink this water, and I thought they some sort of acid
trip. He drinks
this
water. Well, first he drinks the foul, filthy, putrid water.
Yes. And then the water, the statue with the boy peeing or whatever. I don't know what that was all about. The water fountain
just magically starts spouting crystal clear water.
And so he starts drinking the water and tells Nova, hey, come and drink the water. And then he tries to drown her because he's overtaken by water sickness. But it's not water sickness.
It's like he's possessed.
Yes, indeed. And he fights it off with his mental abilities. And he goes into the church. And who does he find? Chano from Barney Miller. Gregory Sierra. And he, by the way, also played Julio in Sanford and Son. And this is a deep cut, but when I saw the name, it was so beautiful. He played Carlos Marcello David Rodriguez El Puerco Valdez in Soap.
Soap.
He was El Puerco.
El Puerco. This is awesome. I miss Soap.
I love Gregory Sierra.
Never seen Soap.
Soap is really good, actually.
Soap is really good. It's not very long. There are not that many episodes, sir. Anyway.
Well, Gregory Sierra acts mostly with bulging eyes in this movie. His actual acting talents are wasted, but this is his first film ever, though.
His acting talents are wasted in this movie?
Well, he fits right in.
I was going to say par for the course.
Yes. So that's when they find these mutant telepath human people. One of which, by the way, Don Pedro Coley, who is in a lot of blaxploitation movies. In the script, his character's name is Ongaro. But he was amused to find that in the actual titles of the movie, his character was just known as Negro.
Nice.
Well, it was the 70s.
Yeah, so we have Don Pedro Coley and also Paul Richards as the main guy, who to me, he was a Johnny Cash looking mother trucker.
Oh, I'm trying to I still can't place who I thought he looked reminded me of. Robert Vaughn,
yes,
a little bit.
I thought it was Robert Vaughn. Yes. Yeah. But the more I looked at him, especially looking at other pictures of him, He should be in the Johnny Cash biopic.
Perhaps.
Yes.
The sound effects for their ESP was the most annoying of all things, I believe.
Yeah, well...
They could have done without the sound effects.
Also, the fat guy, who I think in the credits was just the fat guy.
Friar Tuck.
Yeah, well, Drew...
Little John.
I couldn't help but when I saw him, I thought, ooh, we all walk the wibbly wobbly walk. We all talk
hardware.
Yes, there you go. It wasn't even Drew. It was Brother Jay. great. Hardware's got to be on the list.
For different reasons. Oh, God.
Oh, it probably won't hold up, but it's awesome. I can't wait.
You know that was one of the movies playing at my movie theater.
That has one of the best soundtracks ever.
I think you're the reason we saw that movie, Jason, because we could go see it for free because nobody else was in the theater.
I'm sure you were probably the only two in the movie theater when you saw it.
There may have been one other really sketchy looking dude.
It was probably an employee. I've seen parts of that movie more times than should be seen.
I remember it being super stylish and with a great soundtrack. I own the soundtrack. I think it's Simon Boswell who does the soundtrack.
I think you will find it does not hold up well.
Well, we'll have to investigate. After a bunch of apes movies, it might come out shining like a diamond.
Yeah, now's the time to try it out. In fact, that's a good point. I'm gonna move the last winter up in the calendar.
So here's where I'm going to try to explain what's happening, and you guys can jump in and try
why,
to...
Why? Why?
Well, no,
because... No, I have one question.
Okay.
One question that I think has no answer. But let's try. Let's have a thought exercise. Why are they wearing masks?
That's an excellent question. We find out that they have like what, radiation burns or mutations or something, but they are wearing these masks over their faces so that they look okay. But you're right. To who?
Right. Yeah. For what?
Yeah.
What? It makes no sense. None.
Shock value.
There's no way that you could be making this movie and no one at any point said, but wait, why are they wearing masks? Why are we wearing masks?
Yeah, it seemed like a lot of makeup money went into making them all look mutant.
Less makeup money because they were wearing masks.
Well, okay. But yeah, no, I don't understand that. So this is the best that I can describe the ending of this movie. What Brent and Nova have found is this group of mutant humans who live underground and worship, they all have telepathy. They worship this single nuclear missile, which has the letters Alpha and Omega on it. It's called the Alpha Omega device. We find out from the Omega Man himself, Charlton Heston, who's imprisoned in there.
Who knows everything about the history of missiles.
Yes. They worship this bomb. They have this religion around it. If things go bad, they're just gonna... Basically, it's like the Heaven's Gate people is what they are. They're gonna hail bop this fucker if things go awry. Or Branch Davidians, or actually more like People's Temple, actually. They have captured Charlton Heston. They don't have any... They're not a warlike people. They don't have, like, an army. They have no actual defenses, like physical defenses. All they have is mental defenses. So all this fake fire in the outside and the screen, the humming noise and all that stuff, all the illusions they can, I guess, telepathically project to their enemies are going to get them out of trouble. And if they can't get out of trouble that way, they're going to launch the bomb.
Because they are a peaceful people.
Yeah. Yeah. So then the apes get there and there's some fighting that ensues and Brent is killed and Charlton Heston Taylor is mortally wounded or whatever. And
hey, just like the movie, you skipped over the part where Nova died.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Nova was killed by the apes too, right? The gorillas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, both Taylor and Brent were all like, no! Okay, let's go.
Well, that's the thing, is actually...
Well, she gets shot. She gets shot by the... Not by the... By the... Yeah, the altercation.
Yeah, well, and I skipped over the part where Brent tries to kill her a second time. So, because, of course, they bring in Nova, and Brent thinks that... because they are trying to get information out of Brent about what his plans are, what his evil plans are. He's like, I don't have any evil plans. There's some gorillas coming your way, but I don't have any evil plans. And they bring in Nova. He thinks that they are going to torture her, and they're like, oh, no. No, actually, you're going to torture her.
They don't kill people. They make other people kill people. Because they're not murderers.
Yeah. Well, and by the way, the lady, telepath lady, she is actually in all the rest of the series of movies. She and Roddy McDowell are in all the movies. Are in the most Roddy of the movies, actually. Roddy McDowell is not... He's only in four movies. She's in four movies.
How does Roddy McDowell...
Wait, you haven't seen the rest of the movies yet? It's okay. So we have gorillas that are coming, and they're just basically dumb brutes that are just going to try to kill things just to kill them. And the humans, who have no real defenses except they're going to launch the bomb or blow up the world, the Alpha Omega.
I swear to God, Dick Van Patten is playing the organ.
At the end... You have Zaius, who theoretically, after Ursus is killed, Zaius can actually call everything, and Taylor has a little speech about how Zaius can call everything off, right? Like, this could end relatively peacefully after all the bloodshed, but Zaius refuses to do that. He's like, no, I'd rather have you guys destroy everything, because that's what humans do. They just destroy shit.
It's true.
Yeah. And so... Yeah. Taylor hits the button and the world blows up and ends. Everybody dies. At the end of this movie, everyone is dead.
Are they?
Well, we're going to talk about the next movie next, but any other thoughts about Beneath, the Planet of the Apes?
What the fuck?
Brother Jay, what's your verdict?
I had some problems with the tone of this movie. It was all over the place, but again, it was not very subtle in its commentary or its social discourse. So it was fine. I was okay with the movie up until the telepaths, and then it just went off the rails, and they never steered out of that skid. It was just one bad scene after another. I don't understand the idolatry of all the busts of the other holy men. That seemed ridiculous, other than giving the apes a chance to smash the false idols. They tried to cram religious overtones into it, but then completely disregarded that as a plot point later in the movie when it became too cumbersome to probably explain and integrate. And then they had this constant struggle of the attempt of launching a missile by playing with magical dildos. So
there is a certain amount of dildolatry there. Is it possible that St. Patrick's Cathedral has a wall of busts, or like a hall of busts?
I don't know. It's possible. Although the busts weren't in St. Patrick's, they were in one of the tunnels to the subway.
Oh, that's true. Okay. Well, maybe there's a subway tunnel to St. Patrick's. It's very busty.
I've been to St. Patrick's Cathedral. Oh. There were no busts.
Wow. Ah. Well, thanks for the lesson. I'm not have known. Not so,
know.
You know, it was interesting to see Brent murdered, and die, have a horrible death. And then Taylor came to some kind of, I don't know. It was so discordant. I couldn't, by the end of it, I was just, I was just so happy that it ended.
Well, I definitely did not expect him to destroy the entire world.
I was ecstatic that the movie had ended up until I watched the preview for the next movie.
Well, that's a whole nother issue. See, I didn't watch any of the previews, so yeah. Was it tacked at the end of the movie?
Well, no, because I have the DVD with all the extra features.
Yeah. The 40-year anniversary or whatever.
I thought, well, how they blew up the world. How are they going to get to the next movie? I thought, oh. So we watched the preview, and then Jesse and I were both incredulous because it seemed like a sitcom plot. The trailer for the next movie seemed like it was a wacky, zany, goofy apes come to Earth. And hilarity ensues.
Exactly. Which is what I like about the next movie, because they sold people such a bill of goods with that preview.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Indeed.
That first half of that movie, well, we're going to get to it in a second. But anyway, so if you were to give a grade or a verdict or whatever on Beneath.
I'd give it a C. And that's generous. I'd give the first half of the movie a B. I'd give the last half of the movie a D. So, the music was a bit...
Well, the music consistent.
It was consistent. It just was grating by the time this movie was over. I was glad this movie ended, although I had wished it had ended about 45 minutes earlier. So, it seemed like a movie in two parts, and the second part should have been much better. Had the second part been better, I think it would have been a much better movie. Would have even been a better sequel.
Can you imagine if he just climbed up the ladder following the hum and then credits rolled?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of things. What? Anyway. Yeah. So that's my verdict. I don't know. Watch the first movie. Maybe watch the first half of the second movie, and then go to the third movie. I thought there's no reason to go to the third movie.
Oh, no, there is. Don't trust me.
No, there's a lot.
The third movie really has a lot to do with the rest of the world building. And there is a reason why, if you're a completist, of course, you're going to watch it anyway. But there is one thing about Beneath the Planet of the Apes that you have to know. You have to know that it ends with the world blowing up. Because that becomes a big issue for the rest of the series. That mankind, like, dies at 39, 55, or whatever the date is. That's it's a big deal. So, anyway, yeah. So that's the only thing you really need to know about it. I mean, I think James Franciscus is fine, but I don't think it's really, like, heavy lifting. Of course, I love James Gregory. And I think the shower scene is hilarious, steam room scene is hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Just waiting for Arnold Schwarzenegger to show up with his red eyes.
Well, it's funny because Dr. Zaius, actually, his orangutan makeup actually looks pretty good. But unfortunately, Ursus is just wearing a traditional gorilla suit.
Exactly. Trading places.
So, anyway, I love the acting of James Gregory. Love him. But, yeah, the movie is not all that great. So, anyway, but then they said, oh, no, I don't care if the world blows up. We're going to get another sequel out of this.
Yeah, here's my favorite thing about Beneath the Planet of the Apes. Sorry, this is sort of going to take the long way around. But my wife and I are actually looking for a new church. There's our pastor retired at the church that we've been going to forever, the church we got married at and baptized our children at. And it's just not the same anymore. So we're looking for a new one. And so we've been shopping around and we've got some ideas. But now, because of this movie, I cannot wait to settle on a new church, because inevitably, Mom and Dad are going to, at some holiday, Easter or Christmas, they're going to be like, hey, can we come to church with you guys? They do that every once in a while. And I can't wait to be like, yeah, come to church with us. Oh, by the way, during the second hymn, we all have to take our faces off. And neither mom nor dad, especially not dad, will think that's funny at all. But because of this movie, it will really amuse me to say that.
And possibly your wife?
No, no, she'll be pissed.
She'll just, yeah, I was going to say, she'll just look at you with disdain and hatred.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm willing to entertain a discussion of whether or not Beneath the Planet of the Apes is a good movie, because there are some good parts to it. But if you want to have a serious discussion where you try and tell me it's a good movie, you first have to give me a plausible explanation for why they're wearing masks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you can't answer that, then
what's the cannot
tell me it's a good movie.
I don't think it's a good movie. I just think it has some fun parts to it.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, the next movie, Escape from the Planet of the Apes, 1971, I'm going to argue this is a good movie. I may be the only one, but I'm going to argue it. So, starting with Brother Jay, what did boyfriend Jesse think about Escape from the Planet of the Apes?
I can't repeat what he said verbatim. I can paraphrase that it was a big steamy pile. Also, he fell asleep twice, so...
Well, obviously, he did not grow up watching Young and the Restless.
True. But even me and all of my soap opera-y, Santa Barbara-esque ways, even still having grown up with Three's Company, and this was such a bipolar shit show of a movie...
I agree with the polarity issue. I don't think it was a shit show. But that's okay. You're entitled.
I had a hard time with this. I don't think the acting was great. I was discussing with Brother Drew before your computer was functional. The best part about this movie was Ricardo Montalban.
True.
Yes.
Yeah,
I was so happy when I saw him on screen. It almost made me forgive some of the rest of this movie, just for the briefest of instance. But I was so happy to see him just because it took me out of the movie.
So Drew, what was your reaction to the movie?
This movie was a head-scratcher from beginning to end. The entire time I was watching it, I was just kept thinking, what is this? Like, I don't understand what they're going for. I did not watch a preview. I went into it cold.
Which I think is the way you should go into it.
I think I had seen like a couple minutes on TV before, because I knew that there was a movie where apes were in modern day America. What I didn't remember was that it was like a comedy for a big chunk of it.
Yes.
So I appreciate the left turn it takes. I like the sleight of hand that the movie has, where it sets you up for one thing and then just kicks you in the balls with something else.
Yes, I really like that aspect of this movie.
So yeah, I do like that, but this movie looks terrible. I thought the other movies looked really good, and I thought this movie looked terrible. It looked like this movie was even half the budget of the previous movie.
It may have been.
They said very clearly the reason this movie was able to be made was because they spent almost no budget money on any makeup nor sets. Because there were very few characters in ape makeup, and they shot it at, quote-unquote, the current time of filming, they used sets that were... real sets. They used real locations. They didn't have to construct hardly anything. And they just used current locales. And so there was not any expense for them. So they made it with very little money, and they could just crank away.
Okay. So for Beneath in 1970, that part of the reason for the budget things is that 20th Century Fox was close to bankruptcy. they had a bunch of like big movies that didn't do very well, like Tora, Hello Dolly.
Yeah, Hello Dolly, Tora.
So this kind of, you know, piggybacks with that. And it starts with, I mean, I like the 70s feel of it in the beginning, like the whole establishing shot where the helicopter pilots are saying, yeah, they've got a track on this spaceship that's crashed in the ocean. And they go and they get the spaceship that, you know, they get the capsule or whatever, which is all, you know, if you remember the Apollo, you don't remember, but the Apollo missions all ended with, you know, a water rescue for the crews. So this is all very contemporary. And when they pop open the hatch, what do they see? But three monkeys. Sorry, apes. Later, nomenclature like that becomes very important. But we have Cornelius, Roddy McDowall, Zira, Kim Hunter, and Dr. Milo, played by Sal Mineo.
Right.
Yeah, we had, when we talked about Strangers on a Train, we talked about tragic, actual tragic actors. Sal Mineo was an actual tragic actor in that he starred in Rebel Without, or not starred, and he co-starred, I guess, or was in Rebel Without a Cause and Giant. Also, the movie Exodus. He thought that getting this role in the Planet of the Apes movie was going to kind of restart his career at age 37, because I guess it did wonders for Roddy McDowall, that first movie did. Unfortunately, he was a little bit displeased that they didn't have a big enough part for him, because he gets killed almost immediately. Also, I think before the movie was released, he was a homicide victim.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some punk kid like stabbed him to death in like West Hollywood. And there for a long time, like I think famous people offered big rewards for the apprehension of his killer or whatever, because it was an unsolved mystery for a while. And there was lots of talk about whether he was either like killed over a drug thing or homosexual sex or whatever. But turns out it was just some sort of street guy who was robbing him, didn't know who he was.
He wasn't killed till 76.
I'm sorry, he was killed in 76.
So just FYI, he wasn't killed till 76. The movie came out in 71.
Yeah.
71.
You're right. Okay. Still, it's much more dramatic if this was going to be... Yeah, this wasn't actually, obviously, his breakout role or his comeback role.
So the estimated budget was $2.5 million, and the initial gross was $12 million.
Oh, yeah. No, this movie made money. All the movies were the number one movie that the week they were released. All five of these movies. And when we get to the fifth one, if you think this movie was problematic, the movies have some problems coming up. But anyway, so we get what I think is a pretty great scene where the monkeys come out dressed as astronauts. They have a whole wardrobe. And we learn in a strange thing that Dr. Milo rescued Taylor's spaceship from the bottom of the lake and was able to send himself and Cornelius and Zira on their space mission before the Alpha Omega bomb killed everything. Because that is canon. And then they went through a Heinlein, or not Heinlein, what was the guy's name?
Hassian,
yes. Haslian. He went through a Haslian time tunnel, whatever, and ended up back in 1972 or whatever. Actually, it was a little bit later, right? Say it was in the 80s or something. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's blah, blah, blah.
I thought it was 75.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. And so we have this whole thing where we have talking apes, and it's kind of the reverse of the Taylor thing. So I kind of like that. It's all very 70s. It's very 70s. And we get to meet Dr. Otto Haslian, played by Eric Braeden, who's Victor Newman from The Young and the Restless since 1980. He's actually a German-born actor, and he was the Nazi bad guy in the TV series Rat Patrol. He was also John J. Astor in the movie, Jason's favorite movie we're going to be reviewing soon, Titanic.
Who was he in Titanic?
John J. Astor. He probably had a very small part. He was no Molly Brown.
Yeah, and in this movie, Kim Hunter was making the most of the screen time she had.
Yeah, well, Yeah. See, this movie, it was a comedy in the first act. They arrive. We find out that they can talk. It's all very funny, except that Victor Newman, Dr. Heslian, he sees this is the problem. She tells the story about the world ending in 1939-55 or whatever, and he sees the future. He knows what's coming up. He's like, they are going to be the direct link that's going to take down the entire world, and he wants them killed. So he is a dark figure from the beginning. You don't really know why at first, and you don't really know how dark it's going to get, but it's going to get dark. Sorry, guys. Mm-hmm. It's going to get dark. But it starts out with some fun where, you know, of course, they accidentally kill Milo, since they take them to the zoo, where a guy in a gorilla suit, the worst makeup ever, literally just a guy in a gorilla suit, kills Dr. Milo because Dr. Milo gets too close to the cage, blah, blah, blah. So now we are left with just Cornelius and Zero, and they are now celebrities. And they hang out in swanky hotels where they have weird playground equipment inside. What was the other thing? I didn't write it down. There's the weird seesaw thing. And there was something else. Oh, exercise bicycles, maybe?
He had a robe that looked like some shorts I used to wear.
Well, then they got all decked out in their fancy clothes. And in what I thought was the worst amount of cheese, Dr. Heslian introduced her to Grape Juice Plus, which at first is kind of cute until we find out that she's pregnant, which in, 2017, 2018 is kind of a no-no. You're not supposed to, although I think maybe in the 70s you could probably still get away with that. But then pretty soon he is plying her with Grape Juice Plus. And this is in this part of the movie, or even actually before a little bit, you learn the whole world building parts that I find really intriguing. It's the whole thing about there was, and it's going to sound goofy. Listeners, if you haven't seen this movie, it's going to sound a little goofy. But what happened was in 1980 something, there was a mysterious...
Are you going to talk about the dogs and the cats?
Yes, I am. There was a mysterious virus that killed all the dogs and cats. And humans, who have to have pets, by the way, that's what humans are all about, they decide to replace their dogs and cats with different kinds of primates. And the primates were better than dogs and cats because not only do they provide companionship and whatever, but they could also do, menial tasks. And they had to be trained and whatnot.
Like wait tables.
They could wait tables. Oh, yeah, they actually did pretty sophisticated tasks, as it turns out.
Cooking and cleaning.
Yeah. And they were not treated very well because, they were considered to be pets or slaves. And they were constantly told no until one ape, Aldo, stands up and says the one word he's been told his whole life. And that word is no. Thus began the big battle between humans and apes. And eventually it leads to some sort of nuclear thing that the humans do not really... recover well from, but the apes continue to advance, and by 3955 they are the dominant, the most intelligent life forms, blah blah blah. This is a piece of world building that I think is pretty great. It loops around in itself. This is the chronologically, this is the first movie in the series, and the second movie is the last movie in the series. And so you know where this is going. I mean, that's the thing, is that they tell you, look, this is how this whole thing happens. We're going to loop around until we get there. Everybody knows about this, but the most important person is Dr. Heslian, because he now is like, oh no. And when he finds out that Zira is having a baby, that's a problem, because talking. Apparently, the gift of speech only comes is passed down through genetics. You can't teach speech. You have to be born of speaking people to end up. Kind of a strange kind of time loop that happens that the people in Primer would probably have an interesting thought about whether that could happen or not. But oh well, this is the idea. They came back in time.
Yeah, no, that totally tracks.
Yeah, they came back in time. They were waiting in a room for a very long time to come back and teach the apes how to speak. Or, sorry, teach the children. Anyway, again, it's a little murky there.
Mama.
Exactly. So, they are then brought to the top secret base. Oh, by the way, yeah, sorry. He plies her with alcohol to get her drunk to basically do a... do his interrogation on Zira. And then they are brought to the top secret base. top secret, kinda, and very small. It's a tiny parking lot up front. Really close to the gates, but oh well.
Did you notice the head commissioner dude was from Christmas Vacation?
I did not.
I think he was Clark's dad.
Oh, is that the president? William Wyndham? No. Yeah, well, it makes sense. By the way, Aldo.
Aldo Nova.
Well, yeah, there you go. There's a weird, there's some weird things that happen. Because, you know, like I said, this is some pretty intense world building that they continue on. But they mix shit up all the time. Like in the TV show, they have a General Urko that becomes General Ursus, just without any explanation. Same guy.
Wasn't Urko a Masters of the Universe character?
Ah, who knows?
That was Urko.
Yeah.
Sorry. Hey, I get credit for remembering that half right. Well, come on. I'm old.
There is an Aldo who appears later in this movie series, but the ape that they're talking about that says the word blah 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 that starts the whole revolution. Spoiler: his name is Caesar. But anyway, so
In these original movies, his name is Caesar?
Yes, he is. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Huh. Yeah. No, if you haven't seen the movies coming up, you're in for a treat. The next two movies are a treat. Okay, so we basically have... It's like... It feels to me like maybe an episode of... I guess not the A-Team or... I mean, it's pretty pretty 70s.
The first half of this movie...
Oh, it's like the comedy. The second half of the movie.
Oh. I was like, the first half of the movie is like a goddamn Three's Company
exactly. episode. Yeah, or an episode of The Love Boat or something.
Yeah, the second half is maybe more like, what? Like an episode of Sam Houston.
Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah, Streets
of Houston, you mean?
I think you're right, Matt Houston, right?
Are you talking about the detective show with Lee Horsley?
Was it Lee Horsley?
Well,
with the computer named Baby. It's Matt Houston.
What was Lee Horsley in besides Matt Houston? He was in something else.
The fuck if I know.
What was the show with Stacey Keach?
Oh, Mike Hammer.
Okay, yeah, I wasn't close at all.
You were thinking of Mike Hammer?
That was a detective show, right? Yeah. Was it Matt? The Matt Houston's more like a Fall Guy.
Yes. Although Fall Guy would have been another, yeah.
Fall Guy had a way better theme song than Escape from the Planet of the Apes.
Best. Can you break into it?
No.
Oh, come on.
Was Matt Houston was Lee Horsley and Pamela Hensley.
Yes. Yes, indeed. I'm not the kind of kiss and tell, but I've been seen with Farrah.
Oh, Jesus.
I've never would mess with anyone less than a 9. So fine.
That is still better than this movie.
Anything to avoid talking about impending infanticide.
I was gonna say, but when we end up in the hay, it's only hay. Hey. Sorry. Okay. Anyway.
Next, you're going to have to break out the Simon and Simon theme song.
I don't know the Simon
song. Very, very impressive, by the way.
I couldn't. Yeah. I wish I could pull a whole verse of it, but I couldn't.
Well, I'm not the kind to kiss and tell. But I've been seen with Farrah. I've never been with anything less than a nine. So fine. I've been on fire with Sally Field, gone fast with a girl named Bo. But somehow they just don't end up as mine. It's a death-defying life I lead. I take my chances. I die for living in the movies and TV. But the hardest thing I ever do is watch my leading ladies kiss some other guy while I'm bandaging my knee. I might fall from a tall building. I might roll a brand new car. 'Cause I'm the unknown stuntman that made Redford such a star. I've never spent much time in school, but I taught ladies plenty. It's true, I hire my body out for pay. Hey, hey, I've gotten burned over Cheryl Teagues, blown up for Raquel Welch. But when I wind up in the hay, it's only hay. Hey, hey, I might jump an open drawbridge or Tarzan from a vine. 'Cause I'm the unknown stuntman that makes Eastwood look so fine. They'll never make me president, but I got the best girls, ladies. Some days I've got home as far as the eye can see. Ooh-wee. A morning dive with Jackie Smith, I crash in the night with Cheryl. But in the end, they never stay with me. I might fall from a tall building so Burt Reynolds don't get hurt. I might leap a mighty canyon so he can kiss and flirt. While that smooth talker's kissing my girl, I'm just kissing dirt. Yes, I'm the lonely stuntman that made a lover out of Burt.
How do you remember this?
I don't know where my keys are. So, yeah, so here we go. So we get up in this point where we get to the military base, and things are looking kind of dire for Zira and Cornelius. Then this movie takes us a pretty abrupt turn when Cornelius murders a person.
That's the abrupt turn? What about when they... they drugs Zira with truth serum.
Well, okay, that's true, yes. And that's where we learned a bunch of stuff. Basically, by the way, be careful about saying monkey, because when they referred to Cornelius as a monkey, that's when he smashed the orderly to death. And then they escape. And they end up being assisted by, you know, we have this of these other characters. Stephanie Branton, played by... Natalie Trundy, who was the female in the female psychic or telepath or whatever in the second movie. And Lewis Dixon.
She looks really different when she's not wearing a mask.
Exactly. Yes. He was in Sudden Impact, and the Enforcer is the other guy, who are the ones that are the good doctors instead of Dr. Hasline, who's the bad doctor, blah, blah, blah. So those two help Cornelius and Zira hide, because now we've determined that Zira is pregnant. And we run across a circus run by Mexican national Señor Armando, played by
Armando.
Ricardo Montalban, who is Khan.
The best thing in this whole movie is him.
He's great.
He was great. Yeah. I was so happy to see him.
He's my James Gregory in this movie.
He's in the next movie.
He is. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This next movie starts off with this movie ends.
It doesn't replay like the last five minutes.
It doesn't. No. Sorry. It actually takes a little bit. It starts off a little bit after this movie ends. But yeah.
Good.
Anyway. So,
good Lord.
So, by the way, Ricardo Montalban's circus, they have a chimpanzee named Heloise who just had a baby. And so Zira and Heloise have a little bit of mother bonding, even though the Helobies can't speak, blah, blah, blah. Zira gives birth to her son, who she names Milo.
In tribute.
Yes, in tribute to the doctor, Salminio, who would be murdered 6 years later in real life. So, Hasline is now directing the police and the military to search for all circuses and zoos. So, Armando sends the apes away, points them to an area, or one of the other doctors, I guess, points them to the area where they can hide out in a shipyard, a disused shipyard full of derelict ships, until the heat dies down. And they,
because it's right next door to the movie studio.
Yes. And they can basically lie low until the heat dies down. And then they'll hop on the circus train and go off and live in the Florida Everglades and just disappear into the Everglades and start their whole tribe of monkeys. A very, very optimistic plan.
Well, it seems solid.
Armando really believes that no one should interfere with the will of God.
There's a lot of God talk in these movies. I mean, 1972 was good for God talk, I guess. So they go down to the Long Beach Harbor or whatever. And that must have been a place they could use to shoot all this. And Hasline goes and tracks him down there in his station wagon. Whatever it is. I guess it's a sedan, but...
It's murder mobile.
Yeah, because he's going to murder the apes, especially the baby. He doesn't care about the apes themselves. It's the baby that he wants to kill, because that'll end the line. So that's when this movie takes an even darker turn. Because much like the second movie, everybody dies at the end of this movie. A baby dies in this movie. A baby chimp dies in this movie.
Gets shot like 5 times.
Yes.
And then thrown in the water.
And then thrown in the water by his dying mother, Zira. And Cornelius is killed, and the doctor is killed. Everybody is killed. And that's where the movie ends. Well, there's a tiny little thing after that. But that, I don't know about you, but that was a dark moment. I did not expect him to kill the baby.
Yeah.
That wouldn't get made today.
I don't think so. Well, we'll find out, won't we? Although the new movies don't have the same structure. I don't know. Maybe they do. Hmm. Yeah, turns out the big reveal that Milo, little baby Milo, was actually swapped with Heloise's baby. So poor Heloise, who had a baby monkey, baby chimpanzee, she had her baby taken away from her.
And murdered.
It's
taken away specifically so it could be murdered.
Yes, it's the changeling. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we hear Milo say "Mama"
many times.
Drew and I were discussing
video looping.
Yeah, we were trying to figure out. Drew wanted to know if the "Mama" was the same sound effect as the doll from the first movie.
Oh, we could find out actually. I suppose it's online somewhere. I didn't read that anywhere, but we could actually do an A-B. A?
Dr. Zayas, would an ape make a human doll that talks?
B.
Intelligent creature. But then so were your mother and father.
You be the judge. So, did you happen to see in the notes what the original death scene? The original death scene for Cornelius and Zira was not to be shot. In case you're wondering. Originally, they were to be ripped apart by a pack of Dobermans. Because Dobermans were the Rottweilers of their, or the pit bulls of their generation.
But how would that situation have occurred?
Oh, because they were part of the military.
No, wait. Never mind. Yeah. I don't care.
No, they were used for, yeah, They were the bad dogs in that time.
As soon as the words came out of my mouth, I realized I didn't care.
No, they were going to be sicked onto Cornelius and Zero.
Yes.
Yeah. So
I'm sure.
I think the gunshots were a good idea.
At the LA Zoo, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So
I'm looking for the nuclear vessels.
Yeah, so, Brother Jay, what's your verdict on Escape?
This movie gets a D. This movie, so bad. I can't even wrap my head around how bad parts of this were. It was so comedically bad in the first part with the one-liners and the jokes and the yuck-yucks. And then at the one point in the hotel room where I was convinced they were going to start having a swingers party and have the fishbowl full of car keys, I don't know. Had a hard time finishing this movie. Made even harder by the fact that they murdered everybody at the end. So starting the next movie is going to be fairly difficult.
I will. I'll only give you the advice that the next movie does not have the same bipolar tone problem. It does have the same lack of budget problem, but. It's interesting. Like I said, this movie, and I guess I'm sort of going out of order or traditional order, but I thought that the world building in this and the switch, the bait and switch, the turn that this movie takes, although a hard turn, I like that part of them. I respected that part of this movie. And I forgave a lot of this for 70s as far as how cheap it was looking and how like the direction and the set design and stuff. I think they just did it on the cheap, but that's just me. Anyway, so Drew, was it worth it?
That's a tough one. I think so. I mean, if you're going to watch the Apes movies, of course it's worth it. And I think the turn is brilliant. I love it. I love the turn. It's the end is really hard. So that means that the movie is a success because it made me care about the characters enough to make the final few scenes really difficult to watch. But at the same time, the first part is so campy and goofy that if you can survive it without totally checking out, which is like what it sounds like happened to Jason. Yeah, then I think you can appreciate the term. But if you check out, I mean, then you're not going to appreciate anything that happens in the second half of the movie. And I think it'd be really easy to check out because this movie looks like garbage. It looks so cheap. I think this would be a pretty decent television episode because they'd have to cut a lot of fat,
yes,
you know, to get it down to like a 50-minute episode. So you probably wouldn't have like that drastic of a turn in tone. But that first part is so rough to get through. It goes on too long that it makes this movie pretty difficult. I'm glad I watched it. I thought the end was really affecting. But even if I were to go back and revisit some of these earlier movies, I think this is one I will not watch again.
Huh. Yeah. I get it. I understand that. I think that I like this series of movies. I like the idea of Planet of the Apes. Maybe it's because I remember it wasn't even the TV show I remember nostalgically. It was the Lunchbox. It was the fact that actually, it's funny, without too many spoilers for you guys, at least, the gorilla characters, the gorilla general characters, I think I get my, I guess, respect for their villainy from the TV show, because James Gregory wasn't super villainous. As it turns out, he was Senator Islin. He wasn't like a brutal guy. He was just a military guy who had an objective. But I think in the TV show, the gorilla general was really a pretty big bad guy. And I think in the TV show, one of the main characters gets his head like they do like live brain surgery on him. Like Faces of Death cut the top of his head off to do brain surgery, if I remember correctly. But that could have been a fever dream from 1974 also, so.
It happened right after Eric Estrada was found dead in his apartment, surrounded by chickens.
Stole my line, you bastard. Inside joke.
Yeah, nobody's going to understand.
Oh, waiter, joke for three. Well, Mom, if you're listening, yeah, joke for four.
Mom won't like it, though. We're making fun of our mother. Yeah.
Sorry,
by the way,
Mom.
Is on the mend. So, she sounds much better now.
Good.
Question. Please explain, please to be explaining to me, why did she throw the baby in the water?
Because it was like the most brutal ending possible.
So that they could not perform DNA testing on it to prove that it wasn't theirs. It's the final cover up. Yeah, I don't know. Just to stick an ice pick in your eye.
Exactly.
Because it was for so surviving brutal. A movie that long.
Yeah. Yeah, for a 1970, what? 71? 72? 71. Yeah, 71. Yeah, because the next two movies are in 72 and 73. Planet of the Apes was a big deal. This is also, you know, this is pre-Star Wars, but this was full merchandising era. This actually may have predated the whole Star Wars merchandising thing. I don't know enough about the toys, but I know a lot of, like, collectors of Planet of the Apes stuff. Like, I can't remember the name of the comedian, but he bought Roddy McDowell's house, and he had like one of the like big lawgiver statues in the backyard.
So, Roddy McDowell did?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Roddy McDowell got a lot of mileage out of these movies. This is before Fright Night. And what, after? I'm trying to think where we know him from beginning, before this movie. Anyway, we'll have that discussion next movie. The next two movies in the series we'll do next week, and they will have they both star Roddy McDowell.
Can't wait to find out how that happens.
Oh, it's great. You love it. There's a lot of, you know, I like the there's two. Sorry. I keep saying, like, there's only one problem with this movie. Well, maybe two. No, there's a shitload of problems with this movie. But the one thing about this movie that really sucks and where they missed the mark is that there's not enough apes in it. You got two apes in this movie for most of the movie. And that's it. And that's not enough. And that's the apes are the compelling characters. The thing about this movie that's great is that the apes are the good guys. And basically the humans are, for the most part, the bad guys.
Mm-hmm. I did like the president, though, when, you know, Haslein was trying to convince them, like, they're going to be the downfall of mankind. The president's like, yeah, but not while I'm here, so who gives a fuck?
Exactly, yes. See, that's the way to think about things. Why do we want apes from a bunch of shithole planets?
Why worry about the national debt?
Yeah, exactly.
I'll be dead.
So yeah, so now we've got three Planet of the Apes movies under our belt. Only two more of this series. Let me tell you, there's some good stuff in them. So just keep your spirits high. You only have one more week to deal with this. And then after that, a couple weeks later, I mean, we'll have a couple movies in between. But then this week watched the Mark Wahlberg, Helena Bonham Carter, Paul Giamatti movie. And no spoilers for that, except that there's some stuff to talk about. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts, dial it already.